working as a consultant in innovations in dementia, and she's run the DEEP project, funded by Joseph Rowntree Foundation and Comic Relief, and she's moved on to do some further work for Joseph Rowntree Foundation in how to help people with dementia better connect with each other and support each other. This is Rachel's area of expertise, and I know I'm very interested to hear about the work that she's doing in that area, so I'd like to welcome Rachel.
Thank you. Good morning, everybody. I think if I get to the end of my hour and I haven't answered that question, then do ask me again and I'll try and condense my response. I'm going to use a variety of media to try and help you to think about practical ways of involving people with dementia. So I'm going to talk for a little bit, and then I've got a few film clips, and it would be great to hear some of your comments on some of those film clips. And then I want to pose a couple of questions to you as well, and try to pull together some learning. And I would just kind of reiterate a few of the things that Philly has already said. This is a journey. This is a way of working where we're testing out constantly the best ways of involving people with dementia and trying to kind of make those connections and publicise some of the outcomes, but we're learning together, and I guess that's the kind of message to you, is that the way to do this is to get on and do it and to learn directly from people with dementia themselves. And I just wanted to say a few other things based on what I've just heard Philly say, but it's about the range of perspectives and the range of stories, and I was thinking back to how things have changed in the last 14 or 16 years, really, and that's how long I've been working with people with dementia to find a way in which their voices can be heard. So I started my work working in an advocacy service for people with quite advanced dementia living in care homes. And that was all about people's voices. That was all about people with dementia having a say in what was happening to them, even if they no longer could articulate their thoughts, actually working on that philosophical basis to make sure that people with dementia were at the heart of, at that point in time, the care that they were receiving and their direction of travel still at a very end stage of dementia. And I guess that's the value base that still guides me in the work that I do now. But I think you can't underestimate how far and how quickly things have changed, and it is actually only the last 14 or so years. And at the time I was beginning my work in advocacy, 1998, it was only then that dementia academics were writing about the fact that you could communicate with people with dementia. And you know that is the basis, really, for how you then engage people in collective action and how you engage people in policy and decision making. But you know, you think 14 years ago, we were just beginning to acknowledge that people with dementia had a voice. And so my work then was about enabling people with dementia, individuals with dementia, to have their voices heard. And I think where we've got to now is acknowledging that there's a range of experiences, a range of dementias, a range of stages at which people are articulating their views. And actually, that's the beauty of involvement, is that we have to take all kinds of approaches and not expect that one individual with dementia sitting on perhaps an advisory group or attending a conference can represent that whole range of experience. I also just wanted to touch base on that word involvement. So I'm going to talk about involving people with dementia and some of the practical methods that we have used in the DEEP project, but also in other work, particularly around dementia-friendly communities, as an example for today. But also, it's not just about consultation, it's not just about getting to people's viewpoints, but actually maybe it's about shifting the power and control so that people with dementia are driving their own agendas and that we work in partnership with people with dementia. So I think there's something to be considered about that word involvement and what you mean by it, and what are you really, are you just asking people for their views and ticking your box to say that you've had access to those views, or are you truly thinking about ways in which you can involve people with dementia? So that's just my starting point. Just a little bit about the organisation that I work for. We're a very small organisation. There are only three of us. We're based in Exeter, in Devon, and we work nationally. So we spend a lot of time out in the field, out in the world, with people with dementia. We work on a range of positive projects. So our projects are all about ways of living well with dementia. And I think the thing that has always underpinned the work that we do is that people with dementia are actively involved in our projects. And at the end of my session, I want to show you a film of our think tank. Our think tank is an advisory steering group of people with dementia who guide the work that we do. But we focus on a range of different projects, and we're acting as catalysts. So we're working in particular ways with people with dementia and hoping that we can inspire other people who are delivering services to do that in the way that people with dementia want them to do, and that we can just inspire a little bit of social change along the way. So we work on projects that enable people to live better, live well with dementia, and a couple of projects here. Shared lives of people with dementia. We've been evaluating a social model of care whereby people with dementia have been going to the home of a regular family, a host family, for respite care rather than a regular stint perhaps in a care home. And not surprisingly, the outcomes there have been really positive for people for whom that works. And our Circles of Support project, acknowledging that as people's needs change and crises occur, that your family care, your circle can shrink, and the care can often fall onto the shoulders of just one person. And if that unfolds, then there are lots of difficulties about that. So Circle is about acknowledging the networks that we all have in our lives, that make us who we are, that we rely on for different things that are important to us. And formally working with your existing circle of support to maintain that network to hold you as your needs change, and to work with you and grow and expand and change as your dementia progresses. And we're just coming to the end of that project with the National Development Team for Inclusion and about to report the findings of that. We've always been about amplifying the voices of people with dementia. We work in every part of our organisation with people with dementia. They have a unique perspective. They challenge the views of what it's like to live with dementia. And we've done a lot of work of trying to get those messages out. And I'll show you some of our film clips as part of this presentation. But film is a great way of communicating and getting people's voices into the wider arena. And again, adding into the idea that this is something that is happening to lots of people in lots of different ways, and one size does not fit all. So we have some guidance notes on our website around filmmaking with people with dementia. We make quite strong recommendations to filmmakers about the best ways of engaging with people with dementia. And we have a series of films that we made. And the gentleman here, Peter, he died a few years ago. He had quite advanced dementia, but in terms of getting his voice across, he very much wanted to share the story of who he was and the work that he'd done, which was he was a sculptor. And I think if you watch that film, you'll see lots of interesting things there around consent processes and how, even with quite advanced dementia, he was quite clearly consenting to the process of making a film. And again, to reiterate kind of Joseph Rantree's Foundation's objectives, we're about challenging the way that dementia is perceived in society. So showing what people with dementia are capable of, positively living with dementia. The lady down in the bottom corner, she's Doris, and she's 93, and she'd never used a computer before in her life until she took part in our computer project, and with support, with accessible equipment, began to use computers for pleasure, for leisure, for contacting her family, which is perhaps not what you would expect of a 93-year-old woman with dementia, and perhaps not what she expected. And this lady here is Manuela, and she is on this slide for two reasons. The first reason is that she instigated the Women and Dementia Project, our application to the Joseph Rantree Foundation for the idea that dementia is a feminist issue. She came with us to Department of Health meetings in England to give her views on the implementation of the National Dementia Strategy. And a former trade unionist, a feminist, 85 years old, where are all the women? And actually, it's quite interesting today because we're all women sitting at the front of the stage, but certainly in Department of Health meetings, it was all men. No women's voices, no women professional voices, but also all the people with dementia who stood up at the front of the room were men as well. So that was an idea that rumbled around for a long time. But also, she's really challenging the way we view dementia in that she now lives in a care home, much against her will. Has spent a year campaigning to leave the care home and has actually been listened to by the Court of Protection, who are giving her an opportunity to go home for a month with full care to give it a go. And one of the decisions that was taken by the Court of Protection was that she could have her name publicised. So in her later years, being judged not to have mental capacity to make her own decisions, there was actually a decision taken by the Court of Protection that her name could go into the public arena as an individual with dementia who was campaigning for her very own rights. So I think she's a campaigner to the very end. So we work on a range of projects. The project that certainly is taking my life over is DEEP. And this is as you've heard, a big part of the programme of work for Joseph Rowntree Foundation, and comes out of that idea, really, that there are individuals with dementia with their own story to tell, and sometimes we only hear from those individuals, and those individual stories are absolutely essential. It's the best way of hearing what people with dementia need and want. But actually, what about adding people together, connecting people, creating more collective voices? And these are some of the comments from people who are part of the groups. If we work together, there's more power. Together we are stronger. There's more opportunity to influence change, perhaps, if you're listening to 40 people talking about the importance of early diagnosis compared to that one more unusual individual who's willing to stand up and be accountable. So DEEP is a 3-year delivery programme on behalf of Joseph Rowntree Foundation, which is about building this collective voice. So the report here, and I think the link might be on the earlier slide, possibly, is for an end of phase one project, which is scoping where the collective groups of people with dementia currently are around the UK. And many of you may have heard of the Scottish Dementia Working Group, a very established and long-standing influencing group in Scotland. But from our existing work at Innovations in Dementia, we knew there were a lot more involvement groups around the country who were certainly working with us. So with the Mental Health Foundation, we counted where these groups were, and we talked to the groups about how they work, what values are necessary, what models of work best in terms of engaging this collective voice of people with dementia. And you can read that response in the report there. We counted 16 groups in 2012. So more than was perhaps known on the national dementia stage. 16 involvement groups of people with dementia across the UK. Actually, 4 of those were time-limited pieces of work, so you can knock that back down to 12 involvement groups. We've been going for about 18 months now in this delivery phase of DEEP to try and grow a network. We're now at 37 groups. And to some extent, I would like to take credit for that, but to some extent, these are groups who are becoming inspired by each other. So these are established groups where people with dementia are meeting, but they hadn't thought of themselves as involvement groups. They hadn't really considered that they were influencing and making social change happen by having their voices heard. But actually, you can see that there are some clusters of groups forming. So up in the Northwest, for example, there are groups adding into the mix, and they're looking over borders and thinking, well, actually, that's what we're doing. Why don't we join the network? Why don't we combine our voices with the rest of the network? And Kathy might touch on the FIT group, the Face It Together group, or one of the newer emerging groups as part of the network. What we're trying to do as part of DEEP, which stands for Dementia Engagement and Empowerment Project, is to create a national user movement, a UK-wide movement of groups of people with dementia, so that actually their voices can be heard at the highest level. Interestingly, at the end of the scoping phase of the work, we asked the 12, 16 groups, what do you think of this idea of a national user movement? And groups said, we don't want to be part of a big bureaucratic network. We don't want to be looking nationally so much, but we want to do our local work, influence local change, influence health and social care providers where we live and see change happen. But actually, we're quite interested in networking nationally and learning from other groups and sharing ideas and not starting from scratch. Actually, very, very quickly in the delivery phase of DEEP, groups are starting to become much more political, to become connected and to feel that they're part of something that is bigger and to see that they can have a higher influence. So you'll see some pictures here. The top picture is a new group that's emerging in Northern Ireland that will replicate, to some extent, the way that the Scottish Dementia Working Group operates, in that they can have a say on a cross country perspective. It's easier in Northern Ireland than perhaps it is in all the different regions of England. And this was one of their first meetings. They want to call themselves the Northern Ireland Action on Dementia Group. They see themselves very closely following the Scottish Dementia Working Group model. The middle picture is an interesting project in Kensington and Chelsea in London. And these are people with dementia in the picture who are paid as peer support workers from the health trust. So they are employed, and this is unusual, but there are about three or four examples actually that are emerging within the network of authorities paying people with dementia for their expertise and paying people with dementia for their unique role that they can provide. So they're acting as a point of contact for newly diagnosed people with dementia who are coming through Kensington and Chelsea's pathways. And they're also obviously kind of connecting back to the network and sharing their experiences there. And the final group, I think there's a kind of, who are these groups? All these groups are all shapes and sizes, actually. Some of them are set up as involvement and influencing groups specifically. So the Scottish Dementia Working Group is an active campaigning group. You join, you become a member, you do presentations, you raise awareness, you get involved in government consultations. That's your job, that's your role, that's your purpose. Other groups exist differently. Other groups are peer support groups, daycare groups. We're setting up groups in care homes, where actually it's not so specific that you're a standing involvement group, but sometimes you might dip your toe in the water. And I would say this group down at the bottom, the Swindon group, the Forget Me Not group, they dip their toe in the water an awful lot. They're actually a daycare centre for people with dementia. They support people for quite a long time, and they're able to support within that centre real positive risk taking. And again, if you look on our website, you'll see a film called The Walking Group, who emerged from this centre, and their film is really all about risk. Why is it that this group are out tramping the hills around Swindon rather than sitting in a day centre being cared for? So they dip their toe in the water, they join the network, they get involved in lots of different projects, and this was them receiving an award for some filmmaking work that they did for the Social Care Institute for Excellence. They have really influenced the dementia portal, the gateway, the free training that is available to all social care staff in the UK. They made films, they influenced the content, and they won an award from the Older People's Mental Health media awards for the basis of that work. So groups are doing all kinds of things. We've got 37 groups and counting. I think when we wrote our application to Josie Browntree, we said a few new groups. We weren't very specific. So I'm delighted that there are 37. And I think the idea of this network is kind of taking its own momentum. So lots of other groups are kind of joining all the time, and we've been able to support other groups to form. And groups do a whole lot of different types of work, education, training, presentations, service discussion. So in local areas, they're having, you know, sit-down discussions, focus groups with service providers, with commissioners of services. What does a good dementia service look like? What do you want to see in your service? Recruiting new members of staff. Politicians, lobbying politicians. We've also done lots of national work, and I think that's that's the great thing of the network now, is actually as people feel that they're a member of the network, feel that they're part of something that's larger, we've got an opportunity for national decision makers to recognise that there's a range of people with dementia out there, a range of dementia voices, and you don't just have to have one person with dementia tokenistically sitting on your advisory panel, that actually sometimes you need to go out and meet with people in their groups and you'll have a wider range of experience. So we're doing a lot of national consultations with groups, and groups are kind of driving some of those agendas with the British Psychological Society. The Deep Network is influencing the way that recommendations are being made around the process of diagnosis. We had a fantastic opportunity with the House of Lords, who were reviewing the Mental Capacity Act and wanted to find out what people with dementia thought of the implementation of the Mental Capacity Act. Now, rather than asking one person with dementia to go up to the House of Lords and give a report, Lords got on a train, left London, went to meet a group, spent a morning with a group, having these kind of discussions, which we'd been able to help the group to plan for, to think about, to consider the things that they wanted to say. We were able to make recommendations to the House of Lords about the best ways of holding conversations and running discussions, and they were really up for it. They were fantastic. And I think that that power in numbers, when you've got 37 groups saying, actually, we don't need to be consulted like this, we can do it in this way, it gives us more strength. We can start to dictate, the network itself can start to dictate how it wants people to work with it. And again, kind of reiterating what Philly's been saying, there's something about the presence of people, not just the presence of people with dementia actually, but their the possibility of their participation. So we're doing a lot of work at getting more people with dementia to national public meetings. So public health meetings, Department of Health meetings, Dementia Action Alliance meetings. And you start to have 10 people with dementia, 12 people with dementia in a room of 100. That's 10% of the delegates are people with dementia. They become more confident because they're there together. They feel that they really have an opportunity to have a say. They meet each other and feel inspired by that. But it also changes the way that others perceive what people with dementia want. So just routinely now, we're really working on approaches where we can increase the visibility of people with dementia at events, but also the start again to make those recommendations about the best ways of running things. So running meetings that are dementia friendly, in dementia friendly environments, with some good approaches to how to do this. And just quickly, the support that we are able to offer to groups is about building this network. So we're not trying to hold the network, we're trying to create the network and let it go free to some extent. And that's easier said than done to some extent, but to create the power within the network as a whole so that groups feel empowered to work together and feel confident to change agendas. And the ways that we're doing this are with advice and support and guidance and sharing good practice around the network. So good practice, accessible materials, ways of running meetings, ways of engaging with consultations. We've given out a lot of grants, and just as a flavour of some of those grants, we've given some to new groups to set up. Where there are gaps, we're keen to see groups emerging and for them to join the network. But other grants include making a film so that the groups don't have to spend all their time at events like this. One of the groups, maybe not surprisingly, it's the Forget Me Not group in Swindon, the group I said that like to dip their toe in. They're making a political song. They're recording a political song about dementia, currently being written, and they want to record that in a music studio to kind of challenge that idea of what's possible, but also to get some key messages across. So we're pretty much kind of giving bespoke support and mentoring and making connections between groups so that groups are supporting each other and learning from each other. We're producing a lot of guidance. So if you look on www.dementiavoices.org.uk, that's the website in development for the Deep project, and there is a host of guidance there about good ways of involving people with dementia. A lot of people with dementia, I want to move on kind of now in terms of how Deep and other people with dementia have been engaged in particular pieces of work, and a big piece of work that people with dementia have been engaged in is around dementia-friendly communities. We did some early work for the Department of Health around what makes a community a good place to live with dementia. And we've also done some work for the local government association on this. And I think what has emerged from our work and other work, including the Alzheimer's Society, is that it's a place to where you feel safe, where you can find your way around, where you can use the local facilities and be visible in your local community, where you can keep and maintain your social networks, and where other people know about dementia and can support you. And I think a lot of that reiterates what Philly was saying about that, their intentions in the Dementia Without Walls programme. But significantly, I think, in the work that we did for the local government association, as well as that, as well as it being a good place to live with dementia, people with dementia were telling us that it's also a place where you can carry on having a role and a sense of purpose and making a contribution. And the way that was reported in the local government association toolkit was that actually people with dementia are assets. They bring skills and experiences and life stories which are an asset to local communities, as well as somewhere where there is a need for local communities to make some adaptations so that people can carry on participating. And I just wanted to show now the film of Sue. So we've got a bit of fancy footwork here, talking about her visit to a library and what that means to her.
It's just over a year since I was diagnosed. So in that time, you know, I didn't come out at all. I stayed in all the time. I feel much better now, to the fact that I've actually been in and seen how it's laid, you know, the layout and what have you, and the fact that the people were quite human and helpful, and I think I would be able to go in on my own now and pick my book, knowing that, you know, the people are there to help us, you know, as well. I wouldn't have done it on my own, because I've been trying to do it for, it must be half a year or more than half a year. I've been wanting to come, and I've actually, you know, I've got here now today. And so to me now, that's, I feel as though I've actually done something really good. I do, yeah.
So anything that you picked up from that film about why, what made a difference, I guess, what made her do it?
It's
yeah.
It takes all up to get
yeah.
That
exactly. So I think there's a couple of things. I think one was that the people made the difference. When she went in, and people were friendly. And people have told us in a lot of our work that actually you could have the worst dementia-friendly building in the world, but if you get in the door and somebody there greets you who's aware of dementia, who's friendly, who is a good customer-facing member of staff, regardless of their dementia knowledge, that makes all the difference. And then I think also that idea of support, having practical help to help you to do the things that you want to do, and how long it can take people to do that, and how much time is lost. So, you know, she's taken a half a year to get back to the library, but that was something that was really important to her. So I guess, I mean, why is it important to involve people with dementia? What do you think? Sorry?
To know what to change.
To know what to change.
It's the felt need, not perceived
need. Yes. So you may think, I mean, and I guess in terms of our work, we often think, we work with people with dementia all the time, we often think we know what they want, but actually can still challenge and change because you're working with individuals.
They're the experts,
yeah.
It's become the new isolation now.
Dementia.
Dementia would say is accessing a group already,
yeah,
and then, you know, educating that group to reintegrate them back
yes.
into the group,
yeah.
Because they're not accessing. We're befriending Kenny Carlo,
yeah,
and they're not accessing their normal group,
yeah,
and you know, we need to do some education with that group to bring them back into the group instead of, you know, and sometimes the members of the group don't visit them.
Yeah.
And it's quite isolating for them.
And I think that's maybe one of the outcomes of...
I'd love to know all of your work around that. We grab some ideas from you.
But I think, you know, with the deep network, the confidence and the outcomes of people who have been isolated, have not been listened to, who felt quite disconnected, when they meet other people who... when they meet other people who are... living well with dementia, but also influencing change, it can be like a light bulb and it can really, really pull people back.
Also as well that each person is an individual and group mightn't be ideal for each person.
Yes, yes.
And just to recognise that.
Yeah, yeah. So, absolutely. So the deep network at the moment is groups, and that's there's a purpose for that. It's about building this collective voice. But certainly in terms of good practice around involvement, I think that applies to all people and individuals in other services. And that's a lot of our other work is around working with individuals. A couple of things I had on top of that were well-being, improved well-being. And I think there are two things there. A lot of people who are part of deep groups will say, this keeps me going. I wouldn't be still doing these things unless I had a purpose, unless I was still contributing. But also, there's a piece of research by Knight and Haslam, and I can't remember the year. They're at Exeter University, and they did a piece of work in care homes in Somerset, where there was a new wing being built onto the care home, and some people with dementia would be moving to a new part of the home. And they ran a controlled trial where some people with dementia, some of the residents with dementia, were given, were involved. Helped to make decisions about the decor, helped to be involved in the move. And what they found was that people's reported satisfaction was much higher than people who hadn't been involved, but also that they were using the facilities more, that they were coming to meetings, they were using the lounge, they were connecting to each other in a way that the people who hadn't been involved weren't. So I think, although when I'm talking about the work with the deep network, we are mainly talking about people in the earlier stages, but not always. And one of the things that we're very keen to do is to add to that collection of voices within the network. So, for example, people in care homes, where are the voices there? We have also been able to fund, as part of the deep involvement grant, some work to develop a virtual network around lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender community within the UK, because there was a sense within that community that actually, where are the voices of people with dementia here? They're doubly disenfranchised. So we're able to do some work within the network to have a broader range of voices. But I think those techniques of involving people carry on to the end of people's lives, but actually it's a philosophy and a way of working. So yes, so people with dementia offer a unique perspective, and there's just a few projects here. One is some work we've been doing with Exeter Museum to create a dementia-friendly museum, to do some work on actually how people with dementia can easily use the museum, but also people with dementia have been involved in archiving and commenting on objects within the museum. And these are people with quite advanced dementia, actually, who are coming together to enjoy a particular project, which is looking at objects and being in the museum doing that, but also are contributing to the work of the museum, and there'll be a special display from their work. This is an example of some of the guidance notes, which is been around involving people with dementia in recruitment and selection. And again, the Forget-Me-Not group in Swindon are a great example of how you can continue to support people to have voices at all levels of their care and their life, because they were the interview process for a new care worker within their day centre. So they were on the interview panel alongside other members of staff, but also the people who were coming for interview had to jump through their hoops that they set. So they had to engage in gardening and conversation and making lunch and the life of the day centre. And for everybody within that day centre, it's a very dark picture down here, you might be able to see it, but they were involved in that process. We do a lot of walking, we call it walking the patch, and it's a great way really of really finding out what it's like to experience the world from the perspective of somebody with dementia, and that really helps us to influence change. So there are some people here who have been involved in helping us to say what dementia-friendly communities look like. The gentleman at the bottom, this was with the JRF project, this is around how York train station could become more dementia friendly. So he was supported to find out which train platform his train was going from, to buy a ticket, to find his platform. And all the time we're asking, what's it like? What are you feeling? What would make this easier? And building up that picture. So we use this technique a lot. And I just want to show you a picture of Bert. So this is a gentleman in the top two pictures, and you'll see he looks quite happy there. You'll see at the beginning of this film that he's not so happy. So basically, he missed playing golf. He'd become depressed, he'd lost his confidence, and what he really would have liked to have done was to play golf, and he found it difficult because it wasn't very dementia friendly getting to the golf course, and he couldn't quite remember the process of how to organise that. So you'll see him before and after he played golf. This is Bert.
So why has it been so long, do you think, since you've been out to the driving range?
Truthfully, I can't answer. There's no reason that I can really feel that I should have done, and it may have been me. I let things just, not sure I can
really say. Yeah. I mean, as you said, lack of someone to go with has been a...
Yeah, basically.
Okay.
So someone, if you're going round, you're going with somebody, and while you're going around talking and, nattering and chatting, and cracking little wise jokes, and, the usual rubbish that, one does.
Yeah. Whoa! What is that? That's the first ball you've hit in 4 years, Bert.
That's not bad at all, actually, is it?
So that was the first time in 4 years that you've been to the driving range. How did you find it?
Not too bad.
Okay.
It wasn't as difficult as I thought.
Right. I struggled.
Well, I never thought, you went to the bay alongside.
Mm.
And I went. You went away, and I went back in. As you, said.
Yeah.
And I stood down. I was back against the wall, and something's not right. This, there's something wrong here. So I walked, stopped, and came round to you.
Yeah.
So you've got bloody left-hand pain.
I know. But there was nothing to tell you that it was a left-hand.
Oh, right.
Bay. The other thing that we, I don't know if you remember, when we arrived, we had problems finding where to go. It's quite a big place, and there was no sign, was there, to say. So maybe something. One big thing that would help would just be a simple sign saying, get your tickets here, or
so forth. Yeah.
Because, I felt quite embarrassed. Cause I had to go back twice in the end, because not only did I feed the balls into the wrong hole, when I found the right hole, I then managed to block it up. So, and those sort of things can be quite off-putting for people. So I think there's some things that they can do. So I will look forward to seeing you again next week and having another...
Yeah, sure. Another bash around.
Another bash around.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you noticed, for me it was his hands, before he was very kind of quite low and just kind of couldn't stop him talking really after that had happened. And I think that's, you know, what we've seen in a lot of the groups is actually people, and I was with a group last week when new members had joined, and you see the transformation occur over a very, you know, over that hour meeting when you realise that you're with like-minded people who are living well. It's quite transformative. We've been using technology a lot as a way of engaging people, and I showed you, you know, the picture earlier of Doris using her accessible technology. This was a few years ago, and I'm looking at the accessible technology thinking, oh my goodness, because now everybody's kind of using iPads and things. But and this is the Scottish Dementia Working Group down at the bottom picture using iPads so that people don't have to physically come to meetings, because it can be really, really hard to have to come to a meeting to give your viewpoint. And especially across a network such as Scotland, where it's, you know, there are lots of difficulties there. So the group are learning how to use iPads as a way of connecting. But I wanted to show you here a little clip about the difficulties of technology, but also I wanted to show you, so this is an application we've made for a competition to use more technology to connect people with dementia and why that might be important. But I just wanted to show you a way that we work. So in everything that we're doing, we're constantly rewriting. We're constantly producing the accessible format. And if you want to find out what the views of people with dementia are, don't give them the 100-page dementia strategy. Think about how you can transform that into chunks that people can engage with. And that applies to people living in care homes. So we've done a lot of work as an organisation with people living in care homes, giving their views on quite complex issues such as home closures, such as good quality care. What does that look like? And actually, if you find the right way in, there is a way of really helping people to express their views. I'll move on to that in a moment, but I just wanted to show you a way that we work so that you can see that, and that's number three.
And action.
Hello, Ian.
Hello.
What have you got on your lap?
I've got a pad, and I've had it for some time. But it hasn't done. I need some help.
People with dementia have told us, when you have this dementia thing, it can make you feel like you're the only person in the world. And I need people who know me for the person I still am, supporting me, giving me room to live. Now, this is an application, a joint proposal from DEEP and the Scottish Dementia Working Group. DEEP is the Dementia Engagement and Empowerment Project, which connects public influencing groups of people with dementia across the UK. People have said there's power in numbers. By working together, our voices are louder. We are more of a collective that's difficult to ignore. And this is the Scottish Dementia Working Group, a national campaigning and influencing group connecting voices of people with dementia across Scotland. Now, we want to create some deep connections using things like Skype, like FaceTime, email, digital cameras, movies, and the DEEP website. Now, of course, we know that technology is an excellent connector, and there's massive potential to change the way people with dementia live. But often people with dementia are wary or resistant to using technology, and it can seem just to present too many difficulties.
To start, I have to do that, and that, and it tells you which side your trouble is. It always seems to happen quicker before. Which way is it pointing?
Right. Stop filming. We're going to start.
But good support can give people with dementia power and control to try new things and challenge theirs and other people's preconceptions about what they can do. So this is Nancy, joining a Scottish Dementia Working Group meeting via Skype. Now, this project supports people with dementia themselves to investigate different technologies and applications and the ways in which they can best be used, and then translate this learning into resources for other people with dementia.
Go! Action, camera!
Oh, Harry, is that your iPad? Or is that the forget-me-nots iPad?
It's the forget-me-nots iPad, generously donated to the forget-me-not.
Yeah.
But we've got a
know how to use it.
How do I know?
With great difficulty.
Now, our project will work with people with dementia to test out various computer technologies and applications that will override some of the physical and cognitive difficulties of attending meetings, discussing shared agendas, and ensuring voices are heard at the highest level, using Skype and FaceTime and so on, will support people to maintain autonomy and independence in their own day-to-day lives, things like online diaries, photo applications and alerts, and create support and social connections between individuals with dementia. We want people with dementia to be teachers, to produce online, written and visual guidance, run webinars to inspire others, and provide unique expertise about designability, usability and accessibility of computer technologies. And as Ian is about to show you, sometimes we really need to go back to basics.
Right, now, if you have a pair of glasses and they work, then you should start by putting those on, because these things are quite difficult to use if you're not using your glasses. Try it.
Perfect.
Thank you. So, I mean, I just wanted to show you that film because I thought it was fun, but also this is the way that we tend to present our work back to people with dementia. So we run a lot of meetings. All our time is spent with groups of people with dementia, and that's quite a common way that we will write our minutes. So we will create a PowerPoint presentation of our minutes, and then we will overlay that with the reading of that, and it seems to be working in a really good way. I just wanted to touch on, you know, I'm talking about very specific ways of involving people with dementia, but actually it's about everyday involvement. It's about it being a way of working, a generalised way of working, particularly in care settings. And a lot of our best work has been done, you know, as we're walking with people, as we're talking with people, as we're spending time on other issues. And sometimes we'll use particular tools like talking mats, you may know of, an augmented communication tool. We use a lot of props and prompts and pictures and objects and contextualized discussions so that we can help people to be involved. So you're talking about redesigning a care home, or you're talking about the lounge of a care home. You spend time in there looking at the venue, and I guess that's where the walk the patch comes in. And actually, it's a way of I think it's the value base. So it's the wanting to do it. So therefore, what techniques can we use to make this happen? So these are some of our general principles that you're helping as much as possible for people to understand what you're doing and why. Language will change. You know, where are you talking about high-profile dementia strategies, or are you talking about what it feels like to live here? And actually, if you're talking about, for example, what it feels like to live here in this care home, that means that you can actually kind of spend quite a lot of time helping people to express their viewpoints without thinking about the much more strategic questions that you might want to be delivering. Lots of visual clues, lots of verbal clues, lots of time. You know, everything that we do in our working with people with dementia just takes much, much, much more time and is an investment. And allows you to listen well, and allows people to really feel that they're being listened to. And often, especially in care homes, actually, I often find that when we're working with people in care settings where they don't often have an opportunity to come together to talk, working together, so for example, a project we did in a long-stay hospital in Exeter, helping to redesign that hospital with the input of long-stay patients with dementia, bringing people together to consider artwork in what felt like an art critique session with an easel and beautiful paintings and tea and refreshments, surprised the staff about how well people were engaging, because it felt special, it felt different, but also people were beginning to bounce ideas off each other at a time when they'd not really ever had that opportunity. So I think you're looking at the different layers, the different ways of involving people with dementia, the different levels. You know, is it consultation? Is it ongoing engagement and empowerment? And I just want to conclude really with a discussion about power and control. And in Deep, this is really important to us. Are people with dementia being consulted, or do they have the power? And Deep is very much about people with dementia being in charge, being in charge of this network and taking this network forward in the way that they want to do. But we started some discussions with the network just generally about power and control. And it was actually really interesting because these were empowerment groups of people with dementia. They're used to having a say, and they were saying, oh my goodness, blimey, I have never thought about this word before. And so they started to talk about power and control in their day-to-day lives, and how people can take power away from you quite easily, and dementia itself makes you feel like you're losing control, and that can be added into by the way that other people interact with you. But what was interesting was that as we went on to have another discussion for the British Psychological Society, they kept talking about power and control the whole way through those discussions. So these were really resonant feelings for people. So these are just some of the quotes there. About what people said about power and control in their own lives. But then we started to talk about power and control and this network, this idea that people with dementia are driving forward their own agendas. And it was really strong messages. There was a real sense, which is quite reassuring in lots of ways, that actually you need the safety net, you need the support and facilitation of people like you and me and others to make this happen, to want to make this happen. But actually the control and the power should lie with people with dementia. And sometimes that's hard. I think that's hard as a practitioner. And there's lots of, you know, issues and balances and risks to take into account. But actually people with dementia were saying that, certainly in terms of the Deep network, that the power and control should rest with them. I'm probably running low on time, so I just want to kind of ask you if you would just have a couple of minutes talking with your neighbour about some things that you might be doing yourselves to involve people with dementia. It'd just be nice to have a couple of ideas kind of thrown back to the room, if that's okay. Then we can have some questions.